Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, June 25th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, fast-track trade legislation is headed to the president's desk for signature. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, we'll have the latest on agricultural weather with Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
Let's see how futures settled on this Thursday afternoon. Hard red winter July wheat 535 and a quarter, up 10 and three quarters. September 543 and a half, up 10 and a half. Soft July wheat 532, up 14. September 538, up 14 and three quarters. July corn 376 and a half, up 10. September 382 and three quarters, up 11 and a quarter. December 392 and a quarter, up 11 and three quarters. July of 16, 415 and three quarters, up 11 and a half. July soybeans $10 and a quarter, up 18 and a half. September 979 and a quarter, up 22 and a quarter. November 977 and three quarters, up 21 and three quarters. July soybean meal 336.70, up 8.70. July soybean oil 33.36, up 9 cents. Now last trades, June live cattle 148.70, down 197 and a half, and July lean hogs 74.67 and a half, and they are down 5 cents. And those are last trades and settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lunner's weather highlights, he says that today's forecast is a little wetter overall than what was advertised Wednesday, and by the end of the next 2 weeks, many areas from Iowa and Missouri to Ohio will be left with excessively wet soils and will be in need of drier weather to improve crop development rates. Conditions for crops should be highly favorable in most of the remainder of the Midwest, as mild temperatures and regular rain will occur most often. Another round of moderate to heavy rain is expected today into Friday from portions of southeastern Nebraska to Missouri to northern Illinois and into Ohio, and flooding will increase in many areas. Significant rain will fall on the remainder of the lower Midwest, and late planting should come to an end, as it will likely be too late in the season for significant planting to occur by the time fields firm up enough. There are 6 days left in WILL's fiscal year, and we still have $210,000 to go. If you would like to help by making a donation, go to willpledge.org or call 217-244-9455. It's not too late to join our Stronger Together campaign. And thank you. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
Well, as far as the eye can see, double-digit increases, wheat, corn, soybeans, quite an impressive day if you're on the bullish side. Where would you like to start?
Well, all day I've been sending an old clip from the Honeymooners back in the 50s where Jackie Gleason said, "Alice, we're going to the moon." And I think today is appropriate to start out with that. It's the moon, Alice. And $10 soybean close on July soybeans. The export traders have been looking for $8 soybeans since February 1st, and they've only missed it by $2. And all of these bears that have been talking about sharply lower prices, I think they're all scratching their head here today. And it makes me feel good because I spent all winter talking about the market was ripe to show some kind of price strength as we went down the road here in 2015 because of long-term cycles. I kind of feel that the 55 to 60-month cycle in corn made a low last fall. And I think the low we had in soybeans was a 40-month cycle. So when we look at the fundamentals that's developing, I definitely don't wish anybody a short crop, but this is appears to be the Eastern Corn Belt's 1993. At least that's the way it's shaping up to be, and the market has had to finally wrestle with the idea that these lofty yield projections that they've been talking about all spring is kind of slipping away.
So we look at new crop soybeans, for example, the November month, and we noted that the high for the year was made essentially in the February time frame. And so we got to think that we certainly have a shot at exceeding that. In fact, we're not even all that far from it.
Well, it's been my opinion for some time, and this is what's kept me somewhat on the friendly side, is that only 10% of your calendar year highs on November beans and December corn are made during the month of January. And when they are usually made in the month of January, that is when you've come off of a short crop like we did in 12. So those January highs that was made in 2013 held. But this is a mature bear market. You would think that, listen to some commentary, that this bear market just got started, but it's been in a bear market all through 13, all through 14. And I think we've climaxed that with a two-year decline, and now we're headed higher here. So it's been my opinion that somewhere down the road that we would make new calendar year highs in these corn and November soybeans, and it would take a move into the 430s. I think the January high in these corn is something like 432.5 or something like that. I think the January high in November beans is something like 1034 or something. So a move into the 430s, the punch out those January highs and 430s are targets, at least what I'm looking at as we kind of go forward here. We'll see how things do play out. But going through USDA reports for several years, we do have a big hurdle to cross here on Tuesday, whether or not USDA's numbers pull the legs out from underneath this bull market or actually give it more legs to move on higher as we go on into July and August.
Right, I missed it because the high for the year was actually at the very beginning of January, and it was on Super Bowl report day last year when the market actually made a big move lower. So, yes, it was January last year. So what do we think about those reports on Tuesday?
Well, the trade seems to be gathering around 89 million acres on corn, 85 million acre, 84 million acre, 85 million acres or so on soybeans, and give or take a million acres, I suppose, is the wide range. I have seen one number way high on the corn. Whether or not that is realized or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I'm sure there'll be a surprise there. Corn on the stocks numbers, the trade kind of feels that USDA will report higher end stocks numbers on corn because the feeding use is not as strong as many as what USDA has on their balance sheet. But on soybeans, it's a little tricky because the March report implied that we were way short of soybeans compared to what USDA had on the balance sheet. So either USDA needs to find back some bushels and to keep this thing from skyrocketing higher, or if they don't find any fine back bushels, then that soybean balance sheet for even old crop tightens up extremely tight. And then all of the projections of this new crop with high acres and high yields having 500 million plus ending stocks, all of a sudden that begins to vanish very quickly. So depending upon what USDA throws at us on Tuesday morning, they could maybe tee up this soybean market for a much greater price strength than what anybody would expect. And then maybe even on corn, we'll have to wait and see. But my guess is the way the market closed here today, it tells you that the end user does not have any coverage on, and he's kind of deer in the headlights here, and he's caught short, and so it's going to be interesting to see how things play out, whether or not this market does have legs to strengthen as we go through the summer months.
Thank you much, Dan.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana. In agricultural news, the Senate yesterday approved Trade Promotion Authority 60-58, sending the bill to the president for signature. Bob Stallman, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, says the final Senate vote on TPA sends a strong signal to foreign governments that the U.S. means business at the bargaining table and are ready to complete new agreements. The bill likely will accelerate Trans-Pacific Partnership trade talks. The yet-to-be-approved TPP includes the U.S. and other nations, such as Australia, Chile, Canada, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. Those countries already account for more than 40% of all U.S. ag exports and 47% of all agricultural imports as well. Potentially, Colombia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and South Korea could join the TPP trade deal as well. TPP is expected to lower tariffs that are as high as 240% for products such as U.S. poultry in some countries, and tariffs that can reach 90% for U.S. produce and 50% for beef in some of those markets as well. Around 250 people are testifying today at the Environmental Protection Agency's public hearing on the renewable fuel standard in Kansas City. South Dakota Corn Growers Association President Keith Alverson is one of them. He says the main message from corn growers across the country is that the RFS is working.
It's worked for rural America. States like the Dakotas and Minnesota have seen that firsthand about how we've had, you know, new generations of farmers come back to the farm because of the economic opportunities that's created. You know, so I'm going to key in a little bit from the South Dakota perspective on the economic return that we've seen in our state, the impact that that's made. And then also one of the things that we've worked on here in South Dakota is some of the greenhouse gas and carbon emission reductions that we've seen from corn-based ethanol.
Alverson says reducing the corn ethanol mandate does not make sense.
We've seen a lot of mention of climate change, things along that line, and how the administration and the EPA are focusing on carbon reduction. And one of the things that's really frustrating and kind of counterproductive in my mind is the fact that, you know, something like the RFS, where we see a renewable clean energy like ethanol be scaled back when they're talking, on the other hand, about trying to cut carbon emissions. So it just doesn't make sense.
The EPA has proposed cutting the RFS for corn ethanol by 3.75 billion gallons through 2016. The International Monetary Fund today says that global wheat production during the 2015-16 crop year is likely to hit 711 million metric tons, slightly lower than its previous monthly forecast of 715 million metric tons. The IGC says it has lowered its forecast for wheat production because output from India and Germany, among others, will be slightly lower than previously expected. The CME Group says it will delay the closure of many of its open outcry futures trading pits pending a review of its plans by the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. The delay, now set for only a few days, to July 6th from July 2nd, could be extended to 90 days based on the CFTC's decision on the merits of traders' concerns. The CME has already indicated to the regulator that futures traders are concerned about the possibility that some customers could be materially harmed by losing access to complex transactions not available on the exchange's Globex electronic trading software. Americans increased spending in May at the fastest rate in almost 6 years. Personal spending jumped a seasonally adjusted 0.9% from a month earlier on both non-durable and durable goods. Consumer spending is the biggest driver of growth in the U.S., representing more than two-thirds of output. The combination of higher spending and incomes suggests the U.S. economy is returning to slow but steady growth after contracting in the first quarter. The Federal Reserve's favored inflation gauge remained below the 2% target for the 37th consecutive month. AAA says a stronger economy, rising consumer confidence, and cheap gasoline will likely have Americans traveling in big numbers as Independence Day. An estimated 41.9 million people will travel 50 miles or more from home during the holiday weekend, up 0.7% from last year and the most since 2007. Gas currently costs, on average, across the country $2.78 a gallon, down 88 cents from the same time last year. The Federal Highway Administration this week announced that Americans drove 987.8 billion miles for the first 4 months of the year, topping the previous record, 965.5 billion, set in 2007. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Listening to the Closing Market Report, this is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, very impressive double-digit increases in wheat, corn, and soybeans today. And I guess I have a very basic question about what I'm seeing, and that is, can we say that the price action that we're seeing might be suggestive that end users don't have coverage?
Well, I think that's possible. I think that probably more of it is to do with the fact that we're seeing, you know, an overwhelming short with the funds is being lifted. And I think a lot of that has to do with more than just the fact that we have a report on Tuesday. It's got a lot to do with the fact that situation either. So there's a lot of things that's coming together at the same time and a significant amount of short covering.
And certainly weather has something to say about it, too, as we look at the fundamentals of how many soybean acres yet to be planted, as double crop beans that may not get planted because wheat may not get out in a timely manner, particularly southern Illinois, southern Indiana come to mind. So I guess I want to know is, are we done ahead of Tuesday with terms of bullishness? Are we just going to now sit on our hands between now and then?
Well, you would certainly think that whenever people get positions evened up in some situations, they're going to take a step back and watch. I would assume that nobody's going to be taking a whole lot of new long positions going into this. So I don't foresee us having this sort of a rally, especially on Friday. A lot of it's going to depend upon weather. But I don't think that there'll be a lot of new positions between now and 11 a.m. on Tuesday, personally.
Okay, so then let's go ahead and look at Tuesday. The acreage report will probably get an initial look, but then producers will say and traders will say, yeah, but there was a lot of weather going on in June after the survey, and most folks are already anticipating USDA resurveying some states for the August report, which takes us to that quarterly grain stock report, and that could actually be quite a mover, couldn't it?
Oh, I think so for sure. I think when you look at the report, the main things people are going to be looking at will be corn acreage. I think that that's going to be looked at significantly more than soybeans. Soybeans, there's a lot of beans still in the bag that will probably end up getting planted. Who knows where we're going to come in there, but we're definitely going to look at corn acreage. And then as far as stocks go, there was a wide variety of guesses on both corn and soybeans as far as where we're going to come in at. And I think that, I read Darrell Good's article, and he thought that we'd come in around 455. I mean, that's still, 700-plus above where we're at last year at this time. We have to keep in mind that if acreage is smaller, given the production problems we're looking at right now, it's definitely going to be an interesting dilemma for the market to sort through.
Well, yeah, and put your farmer hat on and just tell me, has the top come off USDA's best guesses for yield, 46 and 166.
Absolutely. I have no question whatsoever that we're going to have a really hard time getting to that 166 on corn, even with ideal weather. You look at Illinois, and I think that Illinois is probably a good 30 to 40 bushel under where we were at last year, even though some areas are in extremely good situation. Some areas are in real trouble. And so whenever we see all these ponds and we see all the yellowing and a lot of nitrogen loss, this is nothing like last year as far as Illinois is concerned. Other parts of the Corn Belt are in good shape. For instance, Minnesota's in excellent shape. But, we've got some real agronomic issues going on this year.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. It's National Strawberry Parfait Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1867, barbed wire was patented by Lucien B. Smith of Kent, Ohio. His simple idea was that of an artificial thorn hedge consisting of wire with short metal spikes twisted on by hand at regular intervals. In 1898, Ferdinand Cohen died, a German naturalist. He is considered one of the founders of bacteriology and is known for his study of algae, bacteria, insect epidemics, and plant disease. In 1918, James Douglas died. Douglas, a Canadian-American mining engineer, helped develop the copper mining industry in the U.S. Southwest. He was co-inventor of the Hunt-Douglas process for copper extraction. In 1921, the process for converting coal dust and hydrogen directly into gasoline and lubricating oils was perfected. And in 1971, Sir John Boyd Orr died, a Scottish scientist and nutrition expert. He won the Nobel Peace Prize for his work to eliminate world hunger. In 1936, his report showed the cost of a diet fulfilling basic nutritional requirements was beyond the means of half the British population, and that 10% of the population was undernourished. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support for this agricultural weather forecast on WILL comes from the friends of WILL and from Busey. Whether it's quickly approaching or many years away, Busey Wealth Management provides retirement solutions tailored to one's specific needs. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
There's a saying that rain makes grain, but I have to tell you, after May and June, is it going to stop anytime soon?
Unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to stop in any meaningful way over the next 10 days or so, but we will say that the intensity of rain does drop off once we get beyond tomorrow. So we'll still continue to see rain for a while. And the main reason is that we still have a warm front that's situated from Missouri through southern Illinois and into Indiana at the moment. And as we move into tonight and tomorrow, a new thunderstorm cluster will develop along that front and then ride to the east and northeast, affecting a large portion of Missouri, central and southern Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, including a lot of areas that are too wet now and a lot of the same areas that received heavy rain over the last 12 to 24 hours. Interestingly enough, we probably have already set the record for the wettest June on record in the state of Illinois, and that goes back to 1895. So we can say with some confidence that this is a very unusual period for June, and it will very likely go down as the wettest in at least 121 years in Illinois. We're not quite there yet for Indiana and Ohio. We need about 1 3/4 of an inch of rain over the next, say, 3 to 4 days to set that record. And we've already seen about a half of an inch to 1 inch over the last 12 hours. So records are in jeopardy to the east of Illinois as well. But we only have confidence saying that Illinois will have broken a record.
So the soils are saturated, and they need to dry out some. So we need some combination of heat and or wind. Are we going to see any of that?
Well, we're going to turn a lot cooler. That's kind of the opposite of what you need as far as temperatures go. As we move into tomorrow and more so on Saturday, a very strong cool front sweeps through the Corn Belt, and that will turn temperatures unseasonably cool across most of the Corn Belt over the next 7 to 10 days or so. We do look for some warming to begin once we get into the July 4th weekend. But the only problem there is that warmer weather will interact with the wet soils that we have to make it easier than normal for rain to recur. And on top of that, just to add to this, the cool weather usually leads to some drying simply because the atmosphere turns stable and it's hard to make rain when it's cool. The situation we have coming up for next week is that it will be cool at the ground with temperatures only topping out in the low to mid-70s, say, across Illinois. But as you move up in the atmosphere, say, 1 to 2 miles high, it will end up way below normal there. So you set up a real strong temperature change from the ground up to, say, a mile or two up, and that will make it easier than normal for thunderstorms to form, even though it's cool. So we're just going to look for rounds of thunderstorms every couple of days all the way through the 4th of July.
Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.